David Steele is founder of Relationship Coaching Institute, the first and largest international relationship coach training organization, and author of Million Dollar Practice, Building a Highly Successful Business That Makes a Difference. That sounds like a wonderful book, by the way. What a title, huh? Million Dollar Practice, Building a Highly Successful Business That Makes a Difference. To learn how you can become a relationship coach or add relationship coaching to your existing practice, you can sign up for a free introduction to relationship coaching teletraining at relationshipcoachinginstitute.com. So we're so excited to have you here. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Barb, very much for having me. I'm excited, too. This is a great program you put together, and I'm honored to be wrapping it up today.
Yeah, I'm so pleased to have you. Like I said, it's a little unfair that we didn't have more men participate in this event, and so you're really out there representing.
Yeah.
So I know you've got a lot to tell us today, and I'm very curious to find out what the Platinum Rule of Marketing is. But let's start out, if you would, tell folks just a little bit about yourself and how you got to be doing what you do for those who just don't know you very well yet.
Well, I'm basically a marriage and family therapist who fell in love with coaching. I've been in the field a long time. I got my start in 1978. I got licensed in 1985. I was in private practice specializing with couples. And I burned out after 15 years or so. It just was a hard way to go to try to save marriages that were on the brink of divorce. And when I discovered coaching, I just fell in love with coaching. What a powerful, positive way of helping people, and is so distinctive from any other helping profession that I'm aware of. So I sought coaching training, and then I became excited about the idea of applying coaching as I was learning it to relationships, and so I looked for a training program, a relationship coach training program, and this was 1996, 97. I couldn't find one. There was none. There was literally no coach training program for how to do relationship coaching, so I had to figure it out myself. And then I started doing it. I ended up building a very successful coaching practice within 90 days, by the way, after launch, which is amazing in itself. And my colleagues caught on. They wanted me to show them what I was doing. And at first I said, no. I'm having too much fun with my clients. Leave me alone. But I really felt an obligation to share this because I really saw it as, you know, finally how we can make a huge difference in the world of relationships. So I did want to share it. So that was the birth of Relationship Coaching Institute.
Neat. And when did you found that?
That was in 1997, 15 years ago.
Wow, that is really early in the coaching history to have done that. I remember that in the early days of coaching, at least from my recollection in the late 90s, coaching was just coming on the scene, and actually having a niche or a specialty within the umbrella of coaching wasn't even really talked about from what I recall.
Right, and I'm very proud of that, and what I'm most proud of is that I figured if I'm going to open a coach training program, I want to do more than training. In order to make a difference in the world, we need to be able to get clients and make a successful business out of this, and I saw even back then how many coaches, new coaches, were just struggling, and so I designed Relationship Coaching Institute from the ground up to be very practical in terms of how we support our members to build successful practices and get clients. So you heard me use the word member. We're a member organization, and I designed it that way so that we can provide a whole wraparound support system with a practice-building program and marketing support and the whole nine yards. So we do far more than relationship coach training. And this is really, it's kind of what I'm all about. I feel a little bit schizophrenic because I have these two huge passions, relationships and supporting singles, couples, and families to have successful relationships, and practice building, because we can't make a difference in the world if we can't get clients and we can't make a living at this. So they're both very, very important. And today I'm representing the latter. And I've written several books on the subject. The latest one is coming out this year in 2012, published by Wiley. And today I'm going to share some important information from that book.
Well, it sounds really interesting. Million Dollar Practice. I think a lot of our ears perked up at the name of that title. I certainly did. So I really look forward to hearing more about that.
Yeah. One thing I would like to share going out the gate about the million-dollar practice, just to be clear about what we're talking about, is that pretty much any practitioner can have a six-figure practice. All you have to do is fill up your calendar with clients, and then you have a six-figure practice for most of us. I aspire to more than that. I want to make a big difference in the world. I have a mission. I have a message. I want to make the world a better place. And so the one-to-many model of serving more people than I can in my office or over the phone one-on-one, that is the million-dollar practice. So the one-to-many model versus the one-to-one model. The one-to-one model, you're pretty much maxed out at six figures.
Yeah, I experienced that myself when all my sessions were filled every day. And, you know, you not only hit a ceiling income-wise because you can't earn any more because you just don't have any more sessions to give, but more importantly, you hit a ceiling on how many people you can help. I mean, once you've got, you know, 25, 30 people in a week, and that's a lot, you're tapped out unless you're leveraging and doing the one-to-many model. And it was actually years before I even began doing the one-to-many model myself because I was taught the way most of us are taught in the one-on-one, one-session-at-a-time paradigm.
Yeah, so when it comes to making a bigger difference in the world and getting groups of people interested in what you do, it is very, very important to package yourself, package what you do, so that they will want it. And that is what the Platinum Rule is all about. So are you ready to get started talking about that?
Absolutely.
So first we got to talk about the Golden Rule. So pretty much everybody knows the Golden Rule. It says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means, I mean, really, it's really the what civilizes us as a society. You know, don't go around treating people in a way that you wouldn't want to be treated. However, the Golden Rule has its limits. For example, in gift giving. Like giving presents. If you want to give somebody a present and you give them something that you like, something that you think is cool, something that you would like to receive, remember, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, are they going to like the kind of present that would ring your chimes? Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. So to be more effective, you would give somebody a present, a gift, that would really please them, that would make them happy, even if it's not something that you would like to receive. And that, Barb, is the Platinum Rule. So the Platinum Rule says, and this is my wording for it, do unto others as they want to be done to. It's actually a very simple principle, but it's profound. And in my role as founder of Relationship Coaching Institute, over the past 15 years, I've seen thousands of coaches come through our programs. And we, like I mentioned, we have practice building programs. We mentor and support our coaches to build practices and to get clients. And we deeply care about their success. And the ones that struggle are just not able to get their hands around the Platinum Rule. And this is actually normal. This is most practitioners because we're so passionate. We care about our area of expertise. We chose it for a reason. We have a calling. We have a mission. And when you are that invested in something, it's really hard to separate yourself from it. So we believe we know what our clients want and need. We believe we know what would work. And so it's really hard to get outside of that. But we really have to. You don't have to when you are helping your client. When you are in the middle of helping your client, go ahead and draw on your own professional judgment, your own expertise, your own research on what works and what doesn't work and what they need as opposed to what they want. I mean, sometimes like with children, you know, you, as a parent, you got to give them what they need, not necessarily what they want. Same with your clients. But when you are marketing or when you're designing a program or a business or a brand, or even a domain name, you know, you have to design it for your desired audience. So where most of us get in the way, in our own way, the number one reason why our marketing fails is that we're designing it for ourselves, not for our target audience. And so if we are going to get powerful, irresistible, effective marketing that will fill our practice and our programs and get large numbers of people interested in who we are and what we do, it's going to be because we, our website and our program and our book and whatever else we put out there, it's for them, not for us. It's for them. We're practicing the platinum rule all the time. Now, as I'm saying this, I have never, ever heard anybody argue with me on this. Everybody will nod their head and say, oh, that's absolutely correct. And in my practice building programs, when I lay this out, everybody gets it, no problem. The interesting thing is, even though we intellectually get it, the actual practice of it, the actual doing of it, is so hard that they still don't do it. And a little bit, in a little bit, I'm going to share my five-step program for implementing the Platinum Rule. And when I train people in this program and say, okay, do this, do this, do this, and do this, and they shake their head, oh, yeah. And they go ahead and they do that. And then they still end up doing what they want to do. They design the logo that they want. They, you know, market a program that they want to do as opposed to what their target audience wants. And then when they struggle, they don't get the sign-ups that they're looking for. People aren't interested. People aren't paying them. And then they wonder what's wrong. So this is so tough. It really requires a huge mind shift, and then you have to implement it. And what I've found is the implementation isn't all that easy, but it is absolutely possible. And so maybe this is a good time to talk about how it's possible, how you do this. But before we do that, any questions about the Platinum Rule versus the Golden Rule, Barb?
No, I really understand what you're saying, that, you know, as a coach or a practitioner or a counselor, oftentimes we can see something that we believe would be helpful. We can see something we might say that the client needs. But if they don't know they need that, if that's not what they are looking for and that's what we market, they're not going to respond. You know, we could be correct. I mean, we could see something we know would change their lives. And yet, if that's not what they're actively asking for and desperately searching for, they're not going to step through the door into our program if that's what we're marketing. So what I'm understanding is exactly that, that it's so imperative to be marketing with that end client in mind, with you know, what are their pain points, what keeps them up at night worrying, what are the things they want to change, what are the outcomes they're looking for, and to market to that. What's interesting, which I'm waiting to hear about, is, you know, what's tricky about doing that? Because you've made it really clear that it's quite tricky. I mean, I think we've all heard that concept, but I guess it's harder to do than we think. And I'm eager to hear you share. Why that is, and really how to do it the right way.
Yeah, it's simple, but it's not easy. But it's absolutely possible, and I'm gonna talk about how in a second. It occurs to me to share two principles that I've learned along the way that made a big difference for me that are profound, and I learned them the hard way, Barb, the hard way. You know, decades of beating my head up against the wall, trying to build my practice, trying to get more clients, and having it not work. So I want to share these two principles so your audience doesn't have to learn the hard way as well.
Excellent.
The first is, and this was a wake-up call to me, you can market till the cows come home and not get any clients. You can market till the cows come home and not get any clients. You can spend hundreds, thousands of dollars. You can have a great website. You can give presentations up the wazoo and not get any clients. You can give away hundreds of complimentary sessions and not get any clients. I had this wake-up call when I spent I allowed myself to be talked into spending $8,000 on a direct mail campaign.
Oh, my gosh.
And I didn't know anything about direct mail, but, you know, I figured the guy said, well, you know, direct mail is proven and is research-based, and all you got to do is get 1% or 0.5%, and, you know, everything sounded really good, and I was ready to try it. And so I just, you know, said, well, what the heck? I'll try it. $8,000. How many clients do you think I got from that direct mail campaign, Barb?
I'm going to guess a very low number.
Zero. $8,000, zero clients. Got me nothing. And that was my wake-up call. You can market till the cows come home and not get any clients, and money doesn't solve any problems. It doesn't. Spending money won't help you get clients. Paying other people to help you get clients doesn't help you get clients. So please remember that. I learned it the hard way. The next principle I'd like to share, this is profound, the implication of this one. People buy what they want, not what they need.
Yep.
People will spend money on vacations and cars, and they won't spend money on therapy and your services even when they really, really, really need it. And as a therapist, I could never understand why. Why not? You know, I'm in Silicon Valley, and outside my window I see people driving Ferraris, and they're getting divorced rather than coming into my office to see me.
Mm.
And then they have to, you know, they lose their Ferrari in the divorce. So the principle is that people buy what they want, not what they need. So we need to package our services, our program, in a way that they want it. And it speaks to, you know, the results that they want, the goals that they have, their biggest goal, their biggest value, solving their biggest problem. We have to craft it into what they want. Now, let's talk about how to do that. I call these my five steps for market research, conducting market research. Market research is the number one secret to building a very, very, very successful practice in creating and marketing products and programs and books and services that people will want and that they will buy. It is the key to building the million-dollar practice, because it's practicing the platinum rule. You are conducting your market research to find out what your target audience wants and needs, what they will buy, what they respond to. So instead of just trying something by trial and error, like I tried that direct mail campaign, you are scientifically just giving them what they want. So how can that fail? You ask your target audience what they want, you give them what they want, and then they'll buy it. It can't fail. And so let me cover the five steps. Step number one is, well, even before that, before you do this, you got to have a niche, right? You got to have a specialty and a niche. Now, if you're not familiar with those terms, and really, you know, words can be interpreted in different ways, your profession is your job title. So I'm a coach, or I'm a relationship coach. That's my profession. Your specialty is the area of focus within your profession. So if I say I'm a relationship coach for singles, I have written a book for singles called Conscious Dating. I have a conscious dating program for singles. I just launched my conscious dating app for singles. So that is my specialty. That's one of my specialties. We can have many specialties, but you don't market all your specialties. When you're marketing one thing to your target audience. So, and then your niche. Your niche is an identifiable group of people. You must have a target audience, and you must know who they are, and you must target your marketing to them. Trying to market to everybody in the world doesn't work. So the narrower we get, the more laser-like we are with our message and to the people that we're sending it to, the more success we will get. And practitioners oftentimes have problems with this. And they say things like, well, I don't want to leave anybody out, or I don't, I like variety. Or, you know, well, what about these people and these people and these people? And that's in your practice. You can serve everybody and anybody that walks in your door. No problem. When you're marketing, you must focus your marketing to a particular target audience. And you must do your market research with that target audience. Now, the successful corporations like, you know, Procter & Gamble, General Mills, Apple Computer, you know, you name it, all the corporations out there, they spend millions, even billions of dollars on marketing and TV commercials and Super Bowl commercials. Do you think they do this without doing any market research? Do you think they would spend a dime before knowing that it's going to be effective? No, they absolutely do market research, and they absolutely know that this particular commercial has gotten a good response from their target audience, that this particular kind of packaging, you know, makes people attracted to it and want to buy that kind of cereal. And so it is how the big, you know, the big guys, you know, make their money, and we can apply this as well. We need to take our cue from the big guys. So five steps for conducting market research, assuming that you have your specialty and your niche all identified, is research your niche. This is step one. Research your niche as much as you can. Their demographic information. What organizations do they belong to? What organizations serve them? What other approaches are available for helping them? And, you know, survey the competition. So find out other similar professionals and programs that serve them and other complementary or different programs and professionals that serve them. And, you know, websites and online social networking groups and books and workshops. Get to know what is available. Put yourself in their shoes of your target audience. If you were in their shoes, what would they subscribe to? What book would they buy? Where would they hang out? You get to know their demographics and their resources as well as you can. Step two, after you've done that, is based on knowing them really, really well now, put together some ideas for your programs, for your branding, for your services. So if you were to have branding, you know, come up with three to five different names. Come up with three to five different logos. Come up with three to five different models for a particular program. Say, for example, you're a relationship coach like I am. And let's say you want to serve singles like, you know, one of my specialties is. And so let's say, you know, there's a number of angles. There's a number of ways to go. You want to serve singles that want to be happy being single. You want to serve singles that, you know, want to find their soulmate and live happily ever after. You want to serve singles that are going through divorce and not quite ready to date. There's a lot of nuances. There's a lot of different kinds of singles out there. So, you know, you put together three to five examples for your target audience. You know, think of it like taste testing. If you go to the store and they have, you know, three to five different brands of tea or coffee for you to select, and they want to know which one you like best, this is what you're doing for your niche. Let them taste test and say, ooh, that one's really cool. Oh, this one doesn't turn me on. Give them a selection. And don't be attached to any one of them. It's amazing how often the one that you like best is not the one that they resonate with.
Right.
I want to say that again. Don't be attached to what you like best. It's amazing how often, it's usually the case in my experience, what you like best is not what works best for them. So that's step two. Put together some ideas for program, branding, services. A great exercise, a question for you. If I were to write a book or deliver a workshop for my niche, what would I call it?
Yep.
If I were to write a book or deliver a workshop for the people in my niche, what would I call it? And boom, that could be your brand, that can be your domain name, that can be your program name. Okay, step three, identify three to five people who fit your niche. Ideally, they're people you know so that they're very comfortable talking to you, telling you the truth.
Right.
And if you don't know anybody that fits your niche, then ask the people that you know for referrals. Say, I'm looking for, you know, singles who have never been married, but, you know, do want to find a committed relationship. Do you know anybody like that? So contact these people for informational interviews. Well, this is where the rubber meets the road. You're going to do actual market research with real people that represent your target audience. Now, you notice I didn't say do a survey. I said do informational interviews.
Right.
Now, the key here is to get qualitative data. These 3 to 5 people represent your entire niche. They're a sample. And surveys, in my experience, I mean, I apologize to, you know, all the other experts out there that advocate surveys, but I will flat out, blatantly, bluntly tell you, surveys are useless. Because let's say you put together an online survey. Let's say you get a lot of responses to your online survey, 100 responses. They're going to be all over the place. And what do you do with that information? And the key in the platinum rule is to get to know your target audience from the inside out, to be so good at getting in their skin, walking in their shoes, feeling in their bones what they feel. And you can only get that by getting close to them, by talking to them, by really, really getting to know them, not by some paper or online survey. So Identify, step three is identify 3 to 5 people who fit your niche, and then conduct informational interviews. And when you conduct these interviews, this is step four, by the way. We're moving along pretty fast, actually. Step one is research your niche, you know, everything you can find and identify, demographic information, et cetera. Step two, put together some ideas for programs and branding and services and all that kind of thing. Remember the question about if I were to write a book or deliver a workshop for my niche, what would I call it? Step three, identify 3 to 5 people who fit your niche. Contact them for informational interviews. Step four is actually conduct those interviews. And I have gotten asked a lot for interview questions. And I do not want you to prepare in advance interview questions. I want you to connect. I want you to have a conversation. I want you to listen more than you talk. And so I don't want you to come in with pre-prepared interview questions. I just want you to connect with these 3 to 5 people. Get to know them really, really, really well. And so how do you do that? Ask them, you know, what they read. Where do they hang out? What groups and organizations are they part of? What publications do they subscribe to? What are their experiences? What are their needs, goals, challenges? Ask them what they've done about it in the past already.
Mm-hmm.
Where they've gone, who they've tried to get help from, what kinds of books they've read about it. The chances are they've done something about the problem or goal before they've talked to you. So get to know what that is. And listen very, very closely to the language they use, because we need to market to them. We need to speak to them in their language. So, for example, in the world of being single, the word for that other person, there's a lot of words for it, like soulmate, life partner, hookup. You know, there's a lot of possible words. So you want to use the word that your target audience resonates with, use their language. And so, for example, in the words that I resonate with the most and the people that I want to work with resonate the most, out of all the possibilities of what to call that other person, significant other, you know, special friend, the words that I resonate with the most and that most people that I work with resonate with as well is soulmate. Now, there are some people that think of the word soulmate and think of it as too woo-woo. Well, that's not real. That's not realistic. But they're not my potential clients. They're not the people
right.
that I want to reach with conscious dating. The people that I want to reach with conscious dating are people that really believe that their soulmate is out there, and that there might even be more than one. There's not just one. But they want to have the kind of connection. They want a soulmate, a deep connection, not just a life partner. I mean, you know, sharing a life with somebody is great, but we want more than that. So I want to work with people that want more than that. So listen to the language they use. And, you know, ideally, you know, record or take notes. Recording's great, but definitely take notes and listen to and write down the words and the language they use. Ask them for their top three problems, their top three goals. And so this is a good exercise because, you know, they might have a lot of problems in their own mind. They might have a lot of goals. But what their top three are will give you a lot of information. And those are the ones that you probably want to draw from for your marketing. So when you ask your clients on your website, when you're marketing on your website or your collateral materials or your announcements, you say, are you blank, blank, blank? Are you tired of the single scene? Are you, you know, seeking, you know, true and lasting love? Are you wanting to be single for the last time? Those can be bullet points. That can be language directly from conducting market research with the people that you want to help. So you don't have to be a good copywriter. You don't have to make it up off the top of your head. The copy in your website and your sales page and even your brand name can all come from them.
So I really like this idea. I just want to jump in. I really like this idea. I've actually done both. It's funny. I've done surveys at different times, and I've done really deep, in-depth interviews, you know, an hour, 90 minutes with one person. And you're right, that deeper cut with someone is so rich and has so many distinctions and nuances. And with a survey, you really scratch the surface. I mean, they serve a purpose. I've used them to great benefit at times, but they have been certainly much more surface oriented, and they don't allow someone kind of that open ended answer. They more, at least in my experience, have had people, you know, click buttons and make choices. And I've looked at, you know, what's the most popular topic and what's the most popular issue people want to work on or hear about. But usually when I've already done the deeper work and I know the milieu and I know the audience, and then I'm just getting some distinctions around some of the last-minute stuff. So that's been my experience as well, that those really deep, intimate interviews have been really, really insightful. I'm glad you're reminding folks of that.
Yeah. So to tie up step four, another idea for you is to ask them to describe their ideal support service or program to address their need or goal. So, like, if you had a class or a workshop or a program to help you, you know, what would it look like? What kind of services would you like? What kind of resources, support system? You know, what would you like to see there? Let them design your program for you. It's amazing. They'll give you great ideas you couldn't have thought of on your own. So step five is compile your data, all the ideas that you've gotten, all the ideas that were stimulated for you from the ideas that you've gotten, and use them to design your services, your branding, and your programs for your niche. And then follow up with your market research participants. Show them, share with them, get their feedback. So it's a feedback loop. You're asking them what they want. You go back and to your best ability from what you've heard and learn from them. You put it together. And then you get back with them and show it to them. Well, what do you think? And in addition to what they say, what I'd really like you to do is pay attention to their nonverbal reaction. Because people are nice, and they will often tell you what they think you want to hear. And by this time, they care about you, and they want to see you succeed. In fact, if you ask them, you know, would you like to join the first program, usually they'll say yes. So actually, this is a great way to get clients, by the way. in fact, whenever I've had my program participants conduct market research, they've always gotten clients or referrals from it, always. But, you know, I warn them, you know, don't make that your primary goal. It's a nice side benefit, but it happens almost every time. so you go back to them and you share with them what you put together. Pay attention to their nonverbal reaction, because that'll really tell you the truth. Now, if their eyes light up, or even over the phone, you can hear it in their voice, you know, the energy level. Do they get excited? Do they resonate? Then you know you're onto something. If it falls a little flat, even if it's intellectually a good idea, you know, then you know you have more work to do. So allow the energy, the resonance that you get from your target audience to guide you. And think about it this way. One of my favorite coaching techniques and questions is to use things like on a scale of 10. So rather than saying, well, how do you like this program? Ask, well, how do you like this program, this idea, on a scale of 0 to 10? You know, 10 being it's just so cool, I got to do it right away. And so if they say it's a 5 or a 6 or a 7 or an 8 or whatever it is, then you follow up with, okay, what would make it a 10 for you? And it's a coaching question, because you know how coaching questions work. When you pose the question, it stimulates something from inside. Now, something that they didn't know was there, something that you don't know was there. And this is when brilliance happens. This is when those out-of-the-box ideas, those things that would you would never thought of in a million years happens. Okay, what would make it a 10? You know, and you would think, oh, well, you know, nothing's changed in that moment between asking the question and getting a response. Nothing's changed. But when you ask a coaching question, somehow it taps into a deep intuition or inner wisdom or whatever you want to call it, and brilliance comes out. And in this case, your potential client is lending you their brilliance. It's like we're all tuned in, you know, in the universe, and we're all tapping into something far beyond us. And I just love the process. So when you're conducting your market research, don't just ask, well, how do you like it? Ask, well, on a scale of 0 to 10, how do you like this? And say, okay, what would make it a 10 for you? And then listen to what they say. And Barb, I've seen this over and over again. I've done it myself. When you go through these five steps, now, number one, they're free. Okay, they don't cost anything. Have you heard anything that cost anything?
No, I haven't.
No, it's free. And 3 to 5 people, we're talking maybe an hour conversation with each one. We're talking, you know, maximum like, you know, 5 hours, 10 hours at the outside. And then getting a wealth of data and ideas, and more importantly, for your own experience, you know, you're getting closer in your ability to step inside their skin, walk in their shoes, feel in their bones what they feel in their bones. That's the important part. Because when you can really empathize with your target audience and really market for them and conduct your program for them, that's when you will be wildly successful. And I want to, at this point, I want to back up all the way to something. I want to really drive home the point of how important the Platinum Rule of Marketing is. I want to share my own interpretation of the underlying message. Okay, the golden rule, do unto others that you have them do unto you. I'm going to give you the kind of present that I think you would like. The underlying message of that, in my mind, is I care more about what's important to me than what's important to you. And as helping professionals, that's not where we're coming from. You know, once we realize that, it's like, ouch, that doesn't fit me at all. I want to be of service. I want to help. I don't, you know, care more about what's important to me than what's important to them. No, I care about them. So it's not where we come from, but when we practice the golden rule and we're putting out what we think is important, what we like, what we think is best, what we think they should buy, what we think they need, then our underlying message is I care more about what's important to me than what's important to you. And I know that's not where you're coming from. The Platinum Rule. do unto others as they want to be done to? The underlying message in that, to me, is I genuinely care about what's important to you. When people get that you genuinely care and you show up and you listen and you respond to where they're coming from rather than what you think they should want or need, when they really get it that you're there for them, when you practice a platinum rule with them, they will come to know you, like you, trust you, buy from you, refer to you. You are on your way to $1 million practice.
Hmm.
So these are my 5 steps for $1 million practice. So let's recap. Step 1, research your niche. Gather everything you can find out about them and who serves them and how and all that good stuff. Step 2, based on what you've learned about your niche, put together some ideas for program, branding, services. How can you differentiate yourself from what else is out there? Put together some program names, book titles. Ask yourself, if I were to write a book and or deliver a workshop for my niche, what would I call it? Step 3, identify 3 to 5 people who fit your niche. Can contact them for informational interviews. Step 4, conduct those informational interviews. And don't script them. Just connect. Have a conversation. Ask them questions. Be curious. And find out what they read, where they hang out, what they subscribe to, what groups and organizations they belong to, you know, all this good stuff. Listen closely to their language. What are their needs, goals, and experiences? What are their challenges? What are their top 3, you know, biggest problems and goals? Ask them to describe their ideal support service or program. And then step 5, compile all that you've gathered, design your services, branding, and program for them. Get back to them, follow up with them, show it to them, give them a taste test, and then ask them, how do you like it? How do you like this on a scale of 0 to 10? Okay? What would make it a 10 for you? And let me tell you another principle that really makes market research successful. The reason why market research and the Platinum Rule is successful, the principle is that people support what they help create. So if you impose something on them that you've created from inside your head, from your expertise, because you know better, they have trouble supporting it. It's like ask any adolescent. Ask any 2-year-old kid. You know, if it doesn't come from them, they resist it. And it's an unconscious but very powerful process. So people support what they help create. When you do market research, when you ask them what they want, what they need, what works for them, what doesn't work for them, and they help you create it, they will support it. And the great thing is that you can start from scratch, having no program, no brand, nothing. You're just a professional. You've just been trained as a coach. And you just choose a specialty, like, you know, relationship coaching for singles. And then you choose a niche, like, you know, never married over 50 guys. And you can start from nothing and practice these 5 steps and end up with a program, a book outline, a brand, a logo, you know, the whole 9 yards. And it's all designed in partnership. In fact, most of it has come from them, not from you. You don't have to make it up. The pressure's off. Now, 2 caveats, and I've already told you one of them. I actually told you both of them, but I want to, you know, cap this off by reminding you of both of these. Number 1, do not use surveys. I've had this very same talk with the people that I mentor, and they come back to me with a survey. No, do not use surveys. Market research, qualitative data, 3 to 5 individual clients that represent your entire niche. Get to know them really, really well. Do not use surveys. It's just lazy. I'm sorry. And the information you get is just not useful. The second caveat is do not ignore your market research and do what sounds good to you. This is all too common. I've seen people go over and over again, go through this process, and then ignore it and just go ahead with what they like. So that's it, Barb. What else
Wow.
do you want to know? What questions do you have?
No, that's great. I think you've been very, very clear, very articulate. You know, I wonder if one of the things that happens is that a lot of coaches, in many cases, specialize in something where they used to be in that target market. Like many coaches, their own personal story of transformation has informed who they're coaching. So now as a successful, to use your example, now as a successful married person with this great relationship, I remember what it was like to be single. I used to be in that painful place. I remember what it was like, and that's going to be my expertise. And I wonder if they mistakenly think they remember what the needs and wants and desires were from when they were back there. And if,
right.
in fact, things really do change, and, you know, today's folks out there may, you know, be very different than my recollection of where I might have been 10 years ago, but I might mistakenly think, oh, I know what they want. I know what they're looking for because I used to be one of them. And that
right.
might be
and
why
the,
people
the,
skip.
The,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And the fallacy is, it worked for me, so it should work for you. And that's just the golden rule right there. In
right.
fact, earlier today, I had a conversation with one of the best coaches, one of the smartest marketers of coaching that I know. I love her. She's great. We're great pals. And I shared with her my latest project was all about, you know, mobile media marketing. And I shared with her about, you know, the importance of, okay, well, you know, people got their noses buried in their cell phones, and guess where we need to be? You know, we need to be where they are. And her first reaction was, you know, well, you know, I don't think that would work because, you know, the people that I want to reach, they're not going to, you know, be like that. Or, you know, I have a cell phone, but I don't spend much time on it. And, you know, she kept on talking about herself and her own experience, her own perspective. And then I shared with her this one fact that right now, as we speak, mobile device use, meaning e-readers and cell phones, smartphones, and tablets, mobile device use exceeds TV and computer use 5 to 1.
Hmm.
People are spending more time on their mobile devices than on television and computers. When you think about it, they're hardly ever more than a few feet away from their mobile devices, even if they're in bed or in the bathroom. And when I shared this with her, she got it. Oh, my God. You know, and so she made that shift pretty quickly, you know, kudos to her, from, well, I don't think that would work, or that's not what works for me, or, you know, that's not where my target audience is, to, oh, my God, this is where we are now. And so this is an example of even when you really know your stuff, you can get trapped in the golden rule. And so this is where it's so important to conduct your market research. Don't assume. Conduct your market research and have an open mind. Really pretend you know nothing. Just blank slate. I don't know anything about this. And let your target audience be your teacher. And then to have this feedback loop. Get back to them and say, okay, well, based on what I've heard from you and what I've learned about all this, Here's my idea for a program to address your problem or your goal. What do you think? And then get their feedback. If you
right.
do that, it really, really, really helps, you know, get out of the golden rule, into the platinum rule, and it really, in my mind, is the secret to success nowadays. You know, people are going to buy what they want, not what they need, and if you want them to pay you big bucks out of their pocket for your coaching and your program or whatever it might be, then package it in a way that they will want it. And market research, in my mind, is the key to doing that.
Well, it's very exciting to hear you talk about that someone can start from scratch and follow these five steps and have a successful brand, a successful niche, a successful target, and a successful program by the end of it. You know, I think people are so eager to skip this kind of stuff. You know, they're eager to just get into action and get into producing things and slapping up the website and putting a program out there. And it's tough to slow down and do these steps up front. People get, you know, overzealous. And you've really, you know, focused on and reminded us the importance of slowing down and building a very, very solid foundation for what you're going to do so that you're doing the right stuff, so you're not out there building the wrong programs and building the wrong website because you didn't create the foundation. You didn't do the pieces required to absolutely understand your niche and understand those human beings at the other end of the coaching agreement. So it's very exciting and very inspiring, and I bet you'd probably tell people to redo this every so often, right? Even successful coaches who feel like they know their market quite well, I bet you would suggest to revisit 3 to 5 people and to do a very in-depth process semi-regularly, I would suppose, because things change.
Oh, well, it's constant. The million-dollar practice is composed of a series of steps that you take your target audience through. Your first program is not your last program. It's just a gateway program. It's the entry into your business. And, mm-hmm. you know, Barb, you call yourself the coach's coach, and so I think you'll appreciate this next and probably last point, which is I've seen so many coaches fail and struggle because they're trying to make up this stuff off the top of their head rather than do the market research. And they are stuck in the golden rule, and they are not getting support. And it is just incongruous to me that we expect and want people to pay us hundreds of dollars a month for support and our coaching, but we won't pay and work with a coach ourselves. So the coaches that struggle and don't have their own coach, and then they get caught up in, oh, well, this is cool. I'll put up a website, and I'll write a book about this, and I'll market this, and, oh, my God, it's not working, and why is it not working? And now I spent $10,000, and now I can barely pay my rent. What do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, it's, as coaches, we need to get our own support so that we, you know, can make sure that we are on track with this, that we're not sort of falling in the traps we see our clients falling into.
Yeah, I agree completely, and I would not imagine doing the work I do without having my own coach. I have always had my own coach. Now, I change coaches from time to time based on my needs changing and wanting a different person's perspective and insight, but I always have a coach, and everything I do is always with the investment in myself to have the support of someone who's gone before me, keeping an eye on what I'm doing, telling me what works and doesn't work, making sure I'm not hitting any blind spots that I'm not seeing. So I agree completely. I second your comment about having your own support system and really working with an excellent coach who can catch the mistakes that you don't even realize you're making, because
yeah,
that's the role my coach plays.
And hopefully a coach that knows about the platinum rule.
Well, hopefully many will after today's session. This was fantastic.
Yes.
You know, what a great way to end the program today. Really fantastic. And before we run out of time, real quick, you have a free gift for everybody that's accessible on our guest experts page. Why don't you tell everyone just really quickly what that is?
Yes. If you go to milliondollarpractice.net, I have actually two gifts for you today. The first is how to choose a niche, because in my experience, the first time you tell a new coach about the need for a niche, that's the question out of their mind is, oh, my gosh, how do I choose one? So I put together an entire program. It's free for you, how to choose a niche. It lays out 11 strategies for finding your niche. And between all 11 of them, you can't miss. And so if you've ever struggled with, you know, identifying your niche, this is a great program for you. The other program is how to get clients in challenging times. Now, here we are, 2012. We've had several years now of a recession, of challenging economic times, high unemployment. And, you know, we all wonder, how's anybody going to hire me if they don't have money, or they're out of work, or they're fearing losing their job? Well, actually, in challenging times is when they need you the most. It's just a matter of how to market to them and how to put yourself out there in a way that they see you as the answer to their problems rather than, oh, my God, if I hire you, I have more problems because I have more money going out the door. So how to get clients in challenging times, a very important program that I invite you to check out, milliondollarpractice.net.
Great, David. And the link to that is also on our guest experts page. So if you don't remember that URL and you go to the guest experts page for the Get to Yes formula, there's David's picture, the description of everything we've talked about today, and right there is a link that'll take you right to those free gifts. So thank you so much for being with us. You're so passionate about this topic. I love your enthusiasm and your conviction. You've been very clear. I love that you repeated the point several times. I think it's been an outstanding session, David. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me, Barb.